Hello everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar, Introduction to Microsoft ML. Our presenters for today are Gleb Krivoshev and Reggie John, Engineering Microsoft Managers at Microsoft. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will run for about an hour. The webinar is being recorded and will be available on demand within 48 hours. A copy of today's presentation and the link to the recording will be sent to you via email once the files are available. If you have any questions during the webcast, please enter your question in the Q&A widget on the left of your screen and click Submit. We'll try and get through as many questions as we can during the live broadcast. With that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Gleb.
Thank you so much for the introduction. So my name is Gleb Krivoshev, and I'll be doing the talking, and Reggie is going to be answering the questions. So I would like to first introduce the today's subject. So we're going to talk about Microsoft ML, the library called Microsoft ML that's been released last week for Microsoft R Server in the release 9.0.1. It is also available through the CTP of SQL, which is the next version of SQL 2017. So let's start. So what is R? R is one of the fastest growing languages for statistical computing, for machine learning, and in general data science. It is open source. It's run by Open R Consortium. It is free. It is highly extensible. There are over 8,000 available packages, and the numbers grow exponentially. It is mainly focused on statistical and machine learning and, in general, data processing domains. It is transparent and reproducible, which allows others to reproduce and validate the results. However, it comes with some limitations, and mainly they're centered around performance. Most of native R functions are single-threaded, which means that they're not able to take advantage of all the power that's available in today's computers. Also, it is really, when it was designed to work on data frames, which are format for data that's stored in memory. It actually makes it very fast and very efficient. However, if your data does not fit in memory, you have an issue. So Microsoft recently has acquired a company called Scale on Revolution R, and then basically that Revolution Analytics. Basically, what it does, it addresses some of the issues of the R language, and it actually enhances it. So it allows it to now be used within enterprise for enterprise scale data. It adds several features such as multi-threading and MKL. So Microsoft has taken a few of the very popular libraries and recompiled them to take advantage of the CPU. Basically, it's an Intel's parallel library that makes matrix operations and linear algebra significantly faster. In addition to that, it introduced the idea of parallel computing, whether it's being on multiple processors or even on multiple nodes, such as in Spark and Hadoop. It also adds a scale, so you can break through the memory barrier. You can actually load the data that is much bigger than available RAM and do basically processing that you can in R, but now you can actually scale it out. And what's very important for enterprise, it also allows you to take the data, take the models that's been generated and turn them into web services or integrate them directly into SQL, which may be very valuable for enterprises. It's currently supported on Windows, Linux, Hadoop, Spark, 2.0 with the latest release, and Teradata. And what is nice as well is that it is designed to kind of write once and run anywhere. A lot of thought has been put into making the switching of the compute context as painless as possible. So if we talk about R, let's now describe what is Microsoft ML. So Microsoft ML is a new machine learning package, and it brings decades of machine learning research that has been going on in Microsoft into the world of R. So we start to add all of the battle-tested and super fast and accurate machine learning algorithms that exist in Microsoft, and now for the first time make them available outside of Microsoft through this package. We also take advantage of the R server features by making those algorithms large, run on data that's bigger than your memory, and it runs in parallel, multi-threaded, and as a result, we have very fast learners. So our vision is to become and to create the best possible ML package for R. And the way we want to do it is to several ways. First is simplification. We want our algorithms to work great out of the box without having to do extensive sweeping. We want to achieve very high accuracy, and we want to also make them run as fast as possible. So we'll talk about it a little later about performance. So for example, if we're comparing TM with the logistic regression package, if we take the algorithm that's available in machine learning, in Microsoft machine learning package, it runs 2 minutes while it almost takes an hour. You use a popular text mining package there. So since it's a version one, we focused on a few key scenarios. And obviously, as the time goes on, we'll expand our coverage. But for now, we're focusing on natural text classification. In other words, make it really easy to take natural text in any language, well, not in any language, but in a subset of languages, and train machine learning classifiers on it. Fast and accurate learners, as I mentioned earlier, and we also introduce deep neural nets with convolutions and GPU acceleration. And last but not least, the pipeline that's used to power the Microsoft ML is capable of handling extremely wide, highly dimensional training examples. So for example, if you have categories with millions and millions of values, we are able to represent it very efficiently and train on it. I'll also be an example later today about that. So let's just cover briefly some of the features that exist in the package, and then we'll spend most of our time today doing demos and going through code. So I'm not going to bore you with slides for too much longer. So let's see. We introduced six learners, and they cover a variety of scenarios, and they also have different scaling characteristics. That's something to be aware of when you're picking a learner that will best suit your task. So in general, if you're having a data that is highly dimensional or has lots of data, lots of rows, or lots of columns, as you can see, it scales up to 1 billion rows and 1 billion columns, you can use a linear, one of our fastest linear learner called, we call Fast Linear. It also supports L1 and L2 regularization. And also what's really nice about it is that it has heuristics built in that will automatically tune its parameters to the data that you have. So that way, out of the box, it will be very accurate. And again, I will demonstrate later on how does that work. We also have logistic regression. One nice thing about it is that it supports multi-class classification. Just to expand on the table, which you can see is on the second column, is basically it tells you what tasks are supported. So we are currently supporting four machine learning tasks, which is a binary classification, multi-class classification, regression, and anomaly detection. So the third row in this table is the DNN. Basically a neural network. It supports an arbitrary topologies that are defined in NetSharp language. NetSharp language is a kind of a way to define basically a topology of the neural net in a relatively easy format. And it's currently used in Azure Machine Learning. We have documentation on that as well. It's also GPU supported, so if you have either a CUDA-enabled graphics card, or if you have access to Azure GPU-enabled SKU, you can actually, VM, you can actually use that learner on that. And the number four comes probably our most accurate and the fastest boosted decision tree learner on the market. It's called FastTree. It's also known as FastRank. It's the algorithm that powers Bing. Most of the time, for most data sets, it will give you the best results. And if it doesn't, if you just sweep parameters of the algorithm, it will probably get you the best result. As a rule of thumb, start with that if you can. However, as you can see, it's limited to RAM that you have. So the way that it works, it actually requires entire data to be loaded in RAM. And that's a limitation. However, if the data fits it in memory, it can be an extremely efficient algorithm, an extremely accurate one at that. One-class SVM is one of the unsupervised machine learning algorithms, and it allows anomalies. And it also can be handy for binary classification when your classes are very unbalanced. For example, you have lots of positives, but only a few negative examples, or vice versa. Since it's version 1, we're currently only available on Windows and SQL, but do not fear. Very soon, we will enhance it to also work on other computing contexts, such as Spark, Hadoop, and Linux. So this is just the issue of scheduling, but it's definitely on our roadmap, and we'll expect to see support coming very soon. So it's nice to have machine learning, but it's nice to have good machine learning algorithms. However, all of those algorithms, they expect numbers as input, just vectors or rows of numbers. However, your data is probably not just numbers. So we've also supply transforms, which are basically pre-processing data steps that allow you to feed data directly into machine learning algorithm. Let's see. Actually, I'm going to skip this slide for now and then just go straight to transforms. Sorry, and I'll come back to this. So the transforms, they basically do the job of taking, say, text or categories or what they're known as RS factors and converting into some input that machine learning can have. So we have featureized text. It seems like a simple transform. It just takes text and turns it into a bag of n-gram counts. However, under the hood, it has a lot of really smart technology coming from Bing and Office. For example, we have built-in tokenizers, we have TF-IDF weighting of counts, there is language detection support, a variety of n-gram options, but if you just simply use it out of the box, it will work. Then if your data has categories, which means IDs or other either strings or numbers that have no numerical representation, such as days of the week or months or customer IDs or PO orders or any of those type of things, then you deal with categories, either categorical or categorical hash. And the difference between the two is the following. Category actually goes to the data first, and it picks up and computes a table or a dictionary, which is then used to featureize this input. On the other hand, categorical hash simply hashes this to a predefined set of buckets. So usually if you have fewer categories or if they're fixed, use categories. But if you have lots and lots of categories, I'm talking like millions, usually at that point categorical hash is much, much more efficient. So, and finally, often you have too many features, and not all of them are actually useful. And having those extra features sometimes can reduce training speed and slow down the training, and actually sometimes reduce accuracy. So we have two methods to reduce the features, either through counts or through mutual information. So those are the basically feature selection options available. Also, something that's not quite exposed in the package directly, but that exists under the hood, is that we use a very efficient pipelining that uses native vectorization of inputs. To translate it to English, that simply means that if you have lots and lots of columns, we have a way to process them extremely efficiently. And then if your data contains such number of large number of features, such as over 50 or hundreds of thousands, it's actually sometimes very convenient, not convenient rather, but it makes a big difference in performance to concatenate those features into a single vector, and that's what that transforms are. So let me then switch to and actually kind of give a quick explanation on what the what's the typical machine learning function looks like and how to use it. I'm going to switch back to one slide back. So imagine that we're trying to learn a linear model using our fast linear algorithm. So if you notice, it starts, the name of the learner starts with this prefix RX. RX is a prefix used throughout Microsoft R Server, and it indicates that this function can run on a variety of computing contexts, such as SQL, Hadoop, and Spark. As I mentioned earlier, of course, the FastLinear runs on Windows and SQL for now, but in the future it will run on everything. So the first thing that it needs to know is, what are you giving it? What data comes in? So you're basically sending the data, which is either a data frame, a pure R data frame, or CSV file, pointer to a CSV file, or pointer to a SQL stream from some SQL query, or which is also Microsoft R Server's file format called XDF, which is, I think it's called extensible or external data frame, which basically means that file can contain a terabyte worth of data, and then this data will just simply stream through this learner without having to use a lot of memory. Let's see. So the next step, the next set of items is arguments are specific to the learner. They're also known in the world of machine learning as hyperparameters. In this case, I actually have a typo in the slide where I say the type of the learner equals binary or regression. In reality, you pick one of the two. You have to specify what task you want it to do. You want it to do regression or binary, and by default, it picks binary. Then it'll be a variety of other arguments that are specific to learners, such as a loss function, L1 or L2. A note, though, is that L2 weight that I specify, in general, you usually don't have to do it because it's automatically selected. If you just omit it, it'll just automatically pick what it thinks is the best. And then the R integrated with Microsoft R Server, you can actually run some R script for every row of the data. And then you specify this using this transforms argument, and there's a group of argument related to it. In my case, I have a very simple expression that basically checks the variable case, and if the case is equals to 1, then it sets the input variable to learner is case to be true, otherwise it's false. So it has a very simple kind of like an R expression. And then finally, you can also add those machine learning transforms. There's a separate pipeline that runs after the R transforms, and that's called ML transforms. And that one is used to provide those 5 transforms I mentioned earlier, such as feature selection, featureized text, etc. So let's see. At this point, I would like to switch to demos. Okay, so our first demo is going to demonstrate the power of text processing within Microsoft ML package. We pick the Amazon Prime video review data set, and what the data has, it has the user's comments, as you can see on the left, and their ratings. They would pick a movie, for example, and say it's a horrible movie, I hate it, and then they put 1 star. Or it says, I love it, it's the best movie ever, and they put 5 stars. So our data set has star rating, which goes from 1 to 5, and then actual text. And what we're trying to learn is to see, can we guess from the text if user is actually happy about something or not? And just to simplify it, we reduce it to a binary problem. We basically say everything 3 and above is positive, everything 2 and below is negative. And just to show you how fast this is, the full data set is 15 gigabytes, it has 12 million rows, and it took us only 20 minutes to train it. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to switch to the Visual Studio so you can actually see what the code looks like. As you can imagine, I will not be using the full data set for the interest of time, and I'll be using a smaller subset that I can run in a reasonable amount of time. Let's see. It will take a few seconds to switch to the screen preview, and once it's live, I will start with the demo. Okay. Okay, so it looks like we can see, I hope you guys can see the screen. Okay, so let's start. So let me then do the following. So I'll just go line by line and kind of explain what's going on. So the very first item, as you can see, is the library. In R language, you use this command called library to load a package that enhances the current our environment. And then we're going to take the data, which I already converted for the interest of time into the XDF format. I'm going to run this. As you can see, it happened very quickly because all it does is simply loads pointer to the data, not the actual data itself, because it doesn't need to load the data into memory. And just for your benefit, I have four lines of this data. Basically, it has zero for basically saying negative or one for positive. As you can see, it says like for zero, it lacks real experience. It's insane. Or for positive, very, very interesting. And what we're trying to learn is like, what are the different words people use to express their sentiment? Then I'm going to define the machine learning pipeline, and it's comprised of two transforms. The first one is featureized text. And what it would do, it would take features, sorry, it will take the string and turn it into a vector of numbers that will then be used to learn on this. And then the second item, we will just basically select the 100, not the 100, but rather only those phrases or words that occur at least 100 times. So what that would do is prevent some rare and unspecific terms to be learned from. And it also speeds up significantly the learning process. So now I'm just going to run this. And as you notice, again, all it is just simply define the pipeline. It doesn't actually run it. And then next, what I'll do, I'll actually run the training. So let's start with a logistic regression. Logistic regression is kind of a workhorse of linear learners. It then will try to predict rating based on features. One thing I should probably come back to the pipeline and explain a bit what happens with the names of the features and the name and the data itself. So actually, in our case, the input column for labels for rating. But for the data, it's called text. But notice, right, it switched to features. What actually happened? The featureized text transform, we can define that it takes text column as an input. And then the output of this transform will now be stored in the column called features. And then the select features transform, which runs afterwards, will then input features and output basically the same column or the same vector column, but it will now be reduced in numbers. So at this point, I'm going to run the learner. It's going to run through the entire data, and then it will compute some statistics, and in 8 minutes, it's complete. Okay? So then what we could do is to run the scoring, in other words, actually take the model and predict the values. We have not seen this using the test data set, and plot our ROC curve, which is a measurement of how good the learner has been. So let's see. Okay, so the task is complete. So the first item, the first function that I ran was called summary. And what it does, it prevents kind of the 20 of the 220 weights that it was actually selected finally to describe which ones of the features were useful and whether they're positive or negative. So what you can see is boring is one of the most likely indicators that the movie was not good. And you can see it has a negative coefficient, meaning it is it's a negative predictor. Waste is also not a particularly positive term. On the other hand, great has a positive weight. So you can analyze the model and actually analyze it and see which of the terms actually do what. You can also notice that there is a bigram. It's a combination of two words, a great, right? So you learned if it's something is a great, then it's an indicator of a positive sentiment. Okay, so let's look at accuracy. Logistic regression give you accuracy of 0.85. We use this measurement or metric called AUC, area under curve, which is independent of precision and recall, which is a very effective way to measure accuracy of machine learning. Now let's try the fast linear algorithm. And if I run this, it will take about the same amount of time, also about 8 seconds as a logistic regression. However, the accuracy will be slightly better. I already printed it out. I'm gonna basically see it in a moment. You can see it's 0.92, which is significantly more accurate. Okay, so this is the first. This concludes the first demo. So next, I'm going to show you a different demo, which is will demonstrate the power of deep neural nets. Let me switch back. So what is the task? It's kind of a classic, almost say a little bit old-fashioned example for neural net training, and it's comprised of digits written by hand from a variety of census applications. And the task is to simply guess, you know, what digit is it? Which out of 10 digits it is, 0, 1, 2, etc. The training data sets are 60,000 images, and it takes a very little time to train, and we're actually able to produce a 2%, less than 2% error rate. I already pre-featurized the data to turn it into basically an array of 784 in integers, which represent the 28 by 28 grayscale pixels. So if I switch back to my Visual Studio, I'll basically be able to see what it looks like. Okay, I think you can. Again, another script also starts with Microsoft ML, also starts with the data, just as you see before. However, what you see here below is net definition. It's a symbolic way to represent the topology of the neural net. What that means really is that you can have any depth that you want, as long as you have enough computing power to do this. So, as you can see, the input layer here contains 28 by 28 pixels. That's how it's defined, 28 by 28. It starts with a convolutional layer, which is, if you're familiar with convolutional neural networks would actually basically process the first layer after the input, and then several second convolutional layer followed by hidden, and then finally the output is 10. What is it? Why is it 10? Well, it's because we're trying to predict 10 values. So basically, it will set either one of those 10 neurons to indicate which of the digits did it recognize. So I'm going to start the script, and then I'm going to show you something else. So this is the function that actually trains the neural net. Something to pay attention to is that it has GPU acceleration. And I can prove to you that it actually uses GPU is I have this little handy task manager from NVIDIA that shows that the GPU is currently not used at all for anything, as you can see, right? Because we're not running training. However, if I start my training, and I'll start it now, after some time, after the data is processed, you will see that the GPU is now used, and we're actually doing 5 billion weights updates per second, which is not too shabby. If you don't have GPU, it will be about 800, meaning approximately 8 times lower. So it provides a significant boost. Okay, and also the boost depends on the kind of task you have. You can have between 2x to 100x, depending on the topology of your neural network. So it can make a significant difference. So just for sake of time, I reduced the number of iterations on this neural net to only 30. But if we had, say, a couple hundred, the accuracy, of course, will be much higher. But as you can see, it goes really quickly, and within approximately 40 seconds, I believe, I think it's 40 seconds, it should tell me, yes, 50 seconds, it will complete. And now we can actually try to see how did we do. So what I'm doing now, I'm plotting a confusion matrix, which basically tells you, you know, when it sees 0, it predicted 0. When it saw 1, it predicted 1 that many times, and sometimes it confused it with 1, and so et cetera, et cetera. And then to summarize this in a single number, I can just show what's called a microaccuracy, which just means how many times do we get it correctly, which is 97.9%. If we average it out, it's basically 2% error. If I run it again for more iterations, I will actually break this 9.7 thing. So that concludes our demo for the MNIST. Let's see. So we have two more, and one other. The next one I'll switch to is Criteo. Let me talk a little bit about the actual data itself. So Criteo data set is a famous Kaggle data set that contains click-through rate, clicks on ads, and it has approximately, I think, 12 numerical features, and it has about, I don't remember at this point, I think it's about 26 categorical features, which means there's some categories. And those categories, there's millions of them. And if you try to train a machine learning algorithm on it, it'll convert each one of those value for each category into a column or into a feature, and we end up with millions and millions of features. This is one of those data sets that actually is very difficult to train unless you have a good support for vectors. So what I did, I actually took the initial text data set and converted it into the XDF simply for performance reason. And while I did it, I also applied our function to convert the missing values into zeros If I would do it for real, I would also add an indicator vector as like basically a way to indicate that this value is missing or not, but just for simplicity, I didn't do it this time. I will not run the conversion function for now, just again for the interest of time. So what we're having now is I have a already converted data set, and the training data set is about 1 megabyte. And let's see if I have it in this machine. I have it here, let's see, under demo. See, just to show you how much data we have in Criteo, we're going through approximately 230 megabytes of this data set. That's after we convert TextDev, got compressed to 83 megabytes. So it's not insignificant amount of data. So again, I'm loading it, and I'm just going to show you approximately what the data looks like. It has about 40 different features, and the features look kind of like this. There's some numbers. And then there's categories. Those funny looking things are different categories. They're just represented in terms of hex numbers. But there's lots of different ones. And so what I do now is then I would then define my formula, which is basically a combination of categorical and numerical. And then I'll apply several transforms to it. So first, remember what I mentioned about concat and how concatenate makes training a lot faster. So what I do, I first take all the numeric features, which I defined here. If you want to see what numeric features are, it's just simply, you know, features number v2, v3, all the way to 14. Those are, you know, the 12 numerical features, and I concatenate them into a single feature that we call that numeric. Then I take all the categorical features that are, as you can see, over here, and they go from 13 to 40, and I converted them into a single feature vector called categoricals. And then what I do, I apply this categorical hash using 16 bits, which means that I have 16 bits, or approximately, I guess, what, 64K features that we're actually going to feed into the learner. And then I just simply run the fast linear learner over the entire data, and I just run it. And then if after about 40 seconds, it would complete and bring back the model. So some interesting thing that I'd like to point out is that this learner has, it does a couple of things automatically under the hood. One of the difficulty in training machine learning is that different, specifically in training linear learners, is that different features would often have different scales. So for example, you might have dollars, and then you might have temperatures, and then you might have some other numbers that have work on completely different scale. And the one thing we automatically do out of the box, so that you don't have to, is what we do called, we do normalization. As you can see in this line, oops, sorry, I'm just seeing if I can scroll here. You can see it says that I'm adding automatic normalization transform, which means that it will automatically normalize all the features to the same 0 to 1 scale, which makes it really easy for the linear learner to learn. It will also do another thing. It will figure out that the first column, which is a label, is actually a Boolean one. It will convert it to a vector for you. And then it will automatically figure out number of iterations, L2, and LR and L1 threshold parameters, set them for you, and then start the iteration. And then after 45 seconds, it will complete its training. So then, if we just take a look at how we did, we just score it and evaluate it, plotting the ROC curve. It'll go through test data, and then it'll come up with approximately 0.75 as the accuracy for this data set. All right, so you see in 45 seconds, we were able to train a learner on a large number of features, over 100, I think 180 megabytes of data, over 1 million examples. We're actually running an experiment right now where we can actually do the same thing on approximately 0.5 terabyte. So you could do the same thing. Okay, so let me switch to the final demo of the day. I'm just going to switch here. Let me clear the space here. So what we're doing here is, at this point, we're going to switch to the customer churn prediction. So the retail store has a database of orders. Let me see if it can actually open it up. It basically says the user ID, their age, their address, gender, and user type. And that's all it is. It basically says that, you know, for each user, what are the type and address and gender and so forth. And we're trying to then predict if the user will leave the shop or not, if they will continue shopping or they will leave the shopping. This data set, again, needs to go through a significant amount of processing, and I'm not going to cover, because this webinar is focused mostly on machine learning per se as opposed to data science, so in the packages that we actually available Microsoft ML. So I do have in this solution, I do have the actual script that featureizes it, and it's quite long, so I don't have time to go over it, but it will be available on samples. Basically, what we're doing there is we're converting the data into this set that has a user ID, its age, its address, and also some number that means recency, which is how long ago have they purchased, delay between activity, and we compute those things like quantity of the items they've purchased, its standard deviation sum, the value or the amount of money spent, how many bottoms they bought, and you know whether they will likely come back or not. Okay. So there's some basically data science work needs to be done to do that, but we're just simply going to focus on machine learning. In this case, what we're going to do now is just going to try a variety of learners and just see which one works better in for this specific data set. And one thing I want to stress is that each data set and even different sizes of data set will might have the different optimal learner to use. So now we're just going to say that the we're just going to take the data and just run it through all the, you know, all the four supervised binary classifiers that we have: fast linear, logistic, fast trees, fast forest, and the neural net, and then just simply run it and see what we get. As you can see, it screams to the data. There's only it takes almost less than a second for each one. Even the neural net was going pretty quickly, and now we're done. We have five models. So we're going to score them all. And then just simply plot a graph that would show you how it would how do they compare to each other. So if I make this a little bigger, you can see that actually different learners have different accuracy numbers. And in this case, fast forest actually came out ahead. It's this purple line right here with accuracy of 0.76, with the next closest ones being fast linear, logistic regression, and the boosted decision tree, fast tree. Okay, so at this point, I think that basically concludes the demos for the day. So I'm just like to then close on the following, is that the Microsoft ML package is currently available on the latest version of Microsoft R Server, which is R Server 9.0.1. And it also, if you're a member of, or if you're also if you participate in CTP or Customer Technical Preview Program for SQL Server, it will also be available through this channel as well. So you might as well download and play with the package. And I would like you to try it out with your data and let us know how it works. And let's see. Now I'd like to switch to the question and answer section. And if there's any questions that might be of interest to the audience, I'll just answer them. Okay. All right. So the first question is, how deep neural net would work with millions of pixels? So that's actually a great question. So in general, if you look at the most advanced image processing algorithms and the most advanced neural nets, configurations that deal with images, what they would often do is they would actually resample the data to something relatively small, something on the order of 200 by 200 pixels. And that's something that's done on the classical deep neural nets such as AlexNet, or I don't remember exact dimensions, but also there is another I think one of the latest winners called ResNet. It also samples it down to something on order for about 200 by 200 pixels and so forth. So that is the most common technique, is that when you train, you reduce the pixels, you reduce the image to a much smaller resolution, and then you train on it. And the reason for it is simply computation. If you have, say, 1,000 by 1,000 by 3 channels of images, you'll basically, you know, it's 3 squared, right? So you'll get 10 times slower performance in training. And another thing that might happen, actually, it will be possibly even become less accurate, because the neural network will then focus on minute pixel details as opposed to general, general features of the image. So, however, what you can do once you train such a network is that you can apply it to a bigger image by panning. In other words, you can investigate one area of the image, then the other, then the other, then the other, and then eventually you might come up with some metric that you do. So Guillermo, thank you for that question. Hopefully I'm able to answer it. Then I will answer Christian's question about, let's see, the question is, the text analysis that we can see now, is it possible with Spanish? Yes, actually, the answer is yes. Spanish is one of the supported languages. And you can actually look up on the MSDN. At this point, we have, if you simply look for Microsoft ML under MSDN, there'll be a description of text transform, and it will tell you what kind of, okay, so let's see. Actually, the answer has been answered directly. Let me just see if Reggie has it. Okay, so languages supported are English, French, German, Dutch, Italian, Spanish, and Japanese. Okay. Also, Christian has another question. Is it accessible through our client? And the answer is yes. It's definitely accessible through our client. If you have the latest version of our client or our server, both of those packages are available. However, there is a catch. If you're using our client, then you're limited to the data that is in memory, and it is limited to only 2 threads, 2 cores actually, to compute. So that means that you will be able to work with smaller data sets and it will be slower. However, if you own a SQL license, you can get a SQL server, you will get a Microsoft R server, and that would allow you to take the full advantage of your hardware. Thank you for your question. Let's see. Does the Azure data, Andy asked a question, does the Azure Data Science virtual machine include R server and I know? The answer to that is basically that the Linux VM already has an I know, but the Windows one will be updated around mid-January or so. Hopefully that answers your question. Okay. Let's see, George from Alter Sciences also has another question, Microsoft ML is the same thing as Azure ML? And that's a good question. Actually, Azure ML and Microsoft ML, they share a lot in common. They share some algorithms, similar algorithms such as FastTree. However, there is a difference. And one of the differences is that Microsoft ML algorithm are packaged in such a way to work a lot faster than Azure ML. And we also have more recent versions of it. But in general, they're similar. We're working on actually making the two of them work really well together, so you can train it on-prem and then deploy it on the cloud or vice versa. That's a something on our roadmap. Let's see if there's any other question. Sumitra also asked if the MML, Microsoft ML package is a part of R Open. And the answer to that is Microsoft R Open is a collection of packages that are open source community R. And Microsoft ML is not that, because it uses a RevoScalar package as a dependency, which means it's actually not. So the answer is no, it's not the case. It's not the case. You need to have either a Microsoft R client or Microsoft R server to use this. Let's see if there's any more. Okay, so Akram is asking, ML package supports speech data input? If it supports the speech data input, or is it just the text data? The answer to that is the package supports any kind of data that you can turn into numbers, right, or text. So if you have a way to represent your speech data that is directly accessible to the learner, then you could. But generally, the answer is no, because usually speech processing is pretty sophisticated way to turn waveforms into something that is a lot simpler for machine learning to have. So probably, I should probably say that we don't support it directly, but it is on our roadmap. We're working on getting that in. Let's see if there's any other questions that I've missed. What other use cases of AML which don't fit ML? Well, there's a couple ones that I can think of at the top of my head. Is that if you would like to have a purely hosted solution that is on the cloud, and it is has a very easy to use graphical interface, then probably AML would be a choice. And if you also your data set's relatively small. Also, MML has a small subset at this point. It has a smaller subset of algorithms. So if you need to use some other algorithms that MML does not support, then you might want to use Azure Machine Learning. Okay. Let's see. Raghunathan has a question. Is RevoR available for free trial and can I code it? And the answer to that is actually yes. And there's two ways you can do this. First, you can download free Microsoft R client. And as I mentioned earlier, you can download it and code within it. And that would be a free. And the other one is if you have SQL Server Developer Edition, which is actually free to use, but it is not, the license prevents you from using it in production. You can actually have SQL Server 16 Developer Edition, and then you can, or actually CTP, or is it, what's it called, the SQL Server vNext CTP, and then you can have this package available there. Let's see, what others? What's the package RStudios? Okay, let me see if there's another question. Let me look through this. Okay, so Vignesh Kumar is asking that I mentioned that it's ML and not data science. Can you please advise what is data science in this particular context? Specifically, obviously the data science include in it ML, so I'm not trying to make that distinction, but I'd rather speak to the part of data science which deals with massaging the data and converting it and feature engineering, and basically taking the data, importing it, doing a whole bunch of feature engineering, and converting it to the format that machine learning can easily learn on. That aspect of data science is that what I was not covering in my talk. And thank you for correction, because ML is obviously data science as well. So. Okay, excellent question from Roberto is, hey, when I try to run library Microsoft ML on Azure ML, there's no package called Microsoft ML. And unfortunately, there is a known limitation that Azure ML has this module called Run R in it. Unfortunately, as of now, it does not support Microsoft R server in it. And as a result, it does not support Microsoft ML. So that is a known limitation that is unfortunately the case for now, which we hope to fix it. I don't remember exactly the version of R that is used, but you can probably find it out. I'm guessing it's 3.3.1, I'm thinking, but you know, don't quote me on it. Let's see. Okay, so Tamanako from SolidQ have a question. How are deployable services, such as one including deploy R, connected to MSML? So the answer to that question is that if you can write an R function, you can deploy it using deploy R. So the answer is yes. If you can train a model in Microsoft Machine Learning package, you can deploy it to say SQL or to a web service using deploy R. So the answer is yes. Okay. Shalini asked the question, could Microsoft ML join sites from charts and trend lines? I'm not sure if I really understand this question. One possible way to interpret it is that can the machine learning understand time series and trends and such? At this point, Microsoft ML does not really have a lot of features to deal specifically with this machine learning task. It's coming in the future, but at this point, no. However, if you have ability to simply represent your chart or a trend line in terms of a binary classification, multi-class classification, or regression, then you can, if you can represent this line in terms of regression, meaning a relationship between some real value and some other inputs, then you can indeed use machine learning to answer the questions that you're looking for. Let's see. There's a couple more questions that I'm probably missing. Let me see if I can find. Let's see. All right, so Przemyslav is asking, will ML library be available for Python? And that's a great open question, and I'll leave you in suspense with this. So I don't have anything public to say at this point. All right, and there's one more. Okay, so from Guillermo is a question, why Forest always gets the best accuracy? And that is not quite exactly what I said. What I said is that the fast tree or the boosted decision tree usually gets the best accuracy. And there's always, you know, depends. There's a caveat, depends. As you saw in my demo, fast forest actually beat a fast tree for that specific example for churn prediction. But in general, statistically, and just from our experience, we find that most data sets that you can fit in memory that have up to about 50,000 features, it just does really good. It is very similar in XGBoost package, if you're familiar with that, or it's a light GBM. It's a very similar class of algorithms. And so it just happens to able to divide the partition space in such a way and work in such a way that it actually is very accurate most of the time. So that's my answer to that question. Let's see. Can I directly connect data available in Azure Blob? That's Subrat is asking that question. I'm 100% sure, but I did see examples where that's possible. You use some other packages to download blobs, and you can read from it, but I cannot answer it for 100%. But I've seen people do it before. Let's see. Okay, so Mahesh is asking, what about text classification models, such as sentiment analysis? Is this sentiment analysis in MML different from Microsoft Text Analytic Cognitive Services? Well, the answer is yes. As of now, what I demonstrated is a way to create your own sentiment analysis model, as opposed to the use the one that's already exists in the Text Analytical Cognitive Services. Text Analytical Services have a single model that is trained on a large corpus of data. However, you might want to train your own based on the kind of data that you have. Maybe your data is different from whatever the Cognitive Service API was trained at. And so the example is show you how you can do it yourself. Okay. Let's see if I have any more questions that I did not answer yet. Thank you, Reggie. Let's see. Osge, let's see where I can find it. Oh, there it is right there. Okay, so Osge is asking, from Microsoft, is asking how Microsoft ML is different from our server for HD Insight. So let's see. So Microsoft R Server is a product that is supported on multiple platforms, and those platforms include local Windows, SQL Server, Hadoop, and there's two flavors, which is the on-prem Hadoop and HD Insight, Spark, which obviously runs on Hadoop, and Teradata. So HD Insight is a hosted version of Hadoop that Microsoft runs as a service, and our server is deployed there. One of the caveats about the Microsoft ML package, which I mentioned earlier, is that it's only supported on SQL and Windows. So at this point, unfortunately, it's not supported. But as soon as it is, it will be available in HD Insight as well. Thank you for your question. Let's see. Jonathan. Excellent question, Jonathan, is what about clustering and then text, how do you do clustering, basically? That's a question of text. And the answer to that is actually Microsoft, our server already has RX function to do clustering. However, it's so what you'll need to do is basically do your own text featurization, because unfortunately you cannot do the MML featurization with that algorithm. So that's kind of the drawback at this point. But this is, again, also we are planning to enhance significantly our text offering, and which should include clustering and unsupervised tasks, and a few other things such as LDA and so forth. But this is something that is still kind of fluid, so I cannot promise exactly what will happen. All right, let's see if there's any more questions that I haven't answered yet. Okay. So Jonathan asks if there's any advanced techniques to implement speaker recognition. And those are, again, speech-related tasks. And as I mentioned earlier, speech is something that we are not focusing on as of now, but eventually, hopefully, we will. Let's see if there's any other ones. Reggie, is there anything else that I should probably take a look at? Okay. Okay, so the question from Thomas is, are the demos available, and can actually see them? And so the answer to that is that this entire talk will be recorded and will be available, I believe, within 24 hours, so you can view it again and be able to look at the demos again. And we plan to publish the demos in on the web as well, so you can then play with them yourself. And also, yes, thank you, Reggie, as well. We will have a blog post that will summarize them, and so you'll be able to copy and paste code and play with it at your own leisure. Thank you for your question. Let's see. We got only a couple more minutes, so if you have any more questions, please let me know. Okay, so there's one more from Biswajiban from Infosys. Sorry if I butchered your name. The question is whether Naive Bayes is supported in Microsoft ML. And the answer is no. And the reason for it is that Naive Bayes is probably one of the most simplest learners there is. And it's rarely the most accurate. I'm trying to remember if Microsoft R actually supports Naive Bayes. I don't remember for sure. I think there is a Bayesian, anyway, there's some other algorithms that are available, but Naive Bayes is not. In general, if you're looking for speed and accuracy, Naive Bayes should not be your first choice. Okay. All right. So one more call for questions, and then we'll conclude this webinar. Okay, so there's one more. Okay, so Sumitra is asking if there's any GitHub repo for Microsoft ML, and the answer to that is not yet. We are working on it right now. Hopefully, it will be shipped soon. Okay. All right, so with this, we're out of time, and I'd like to thank you so much for attending this webinar, and hopefully you find it useful. Please leave any other comments, suggestions, questions that you would like in the chat window, and we would like to get back to you through that same channel. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gleb, for the great presentation. Everyone, as a reminder, we'll be sending out the slides and a recording of the session shortly via email. Please take a moment to fill out the survey questions as well to the right of your screen. Your feedback really helps us to improve our webinars. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and have a great day.